Thank you for staying with me. And I want to get right back into this. Before we do, though, I'd like to just make an observation. It seems to me that the same thing that piques our interest in this subject, the thing that opens our eyes that we're even able to, we struggle with it even after we see it, but even that we're able to see it, I think it's the same thing that allows us to hear the gospel message. And I would hope that you would agree with this. That who we often identify as the remnant, remnant believers are the only ones that can really even hear this, and of course the facilitators can hear it, and they do it to us. They turn it around on us. So I'm not trying to say that only the Christians can hear this, but the same thing that allows us to hear the gospel seems to be similar to the thing that allows us to hear what's going on with this evil
Right, it's
thing.
because it's the same pattern. Because we're born into it, we're born into sin, we're born into rebellion, and the those who think dialectic, this goes back to Gnosticism. I'll throw a curve here on this with you, because it's a God who didn't know himself to begin with. They would call that consciousness, okay? And then you become self-conscious, and you can't become self-conscious until something confronts you. So that would be an antithesis. So the child is being himself, human nature in its pure form. Adam and Eve were pure human, pure humanists, until God said a cannot. And so the cannot then made them self-conscious. See, the parent, and so the dialectician would say, well, okay, we do need some confrontation, some crisis out there
To make you self-aware.
to make us
Wow,
aware
that
of
is amazing.
ourself. But it's not enough there because you're just talking to yourself. That now you're talking to yourself. You're aware of self. You're dialoguing with yourself. But you've got to reason, because that's true. Dialectic is the thought process. It's justification. It's evaluating and justifying your human nature as the foundation for reality. And that's why Bloom says truth and knowledge is only relative, because our feelings are always changing. And so if reality is based upon our feelings and our thoughts, then anything that's rigid, anything that's absolute, isn't reality. It's illusion. See how that's, Marx would say religion is an illusion because it is rigid. It keeps us from changing. Laws need to be adaptable to the changing moments,
Keeps us from being ourselves.
And so the dialectician is always focused on how to evaluate the situation. Who's traditional? Who's rigid? Who's right and wrong? Who's black and white? Who's transition? And if you're talking, if I can find out what you're talking to yourself about, you're in transition, because transition is you internally talking to yourself about your dissatisfaction. Number one, what you want to do, and number two, your dissatisfaction with whatever is preventing you from doing it. Those two things. The child wanted to do whatever he wants to do, and the parental authority that prevents him from doing it. So that's the beginning of philosophy, but he really wants to move you to the third stage of thinking now. And you can't think unless it's social, see, because now you've got to compare notes with somebody else. And that's where the dialogue came in. Because if you're preaching, you come in and say, groups dialogue, and you say, well, that's wrong. See, you're going to bring the father's voice back into the room. And the other children might get a guilty conscience. Yeah, he's right. We don't like to hear it, but he's right. And that cuts off dialogue. So the role of the facilitator is to identify who's in the room. If you have a room full of traditional people, this isn't going to work. If you have a room full of transitional people, talking to themselves, but they don't verbally, you might have a few traditional, but you got a lot better chance. And you need help, so you need the transformational. Those other kids who have already learned the process, think it's normal, actually enjoy doing it, because we all enjoy getting what we want, right? And we all enjoy with a hope, working with others with the hope that we can get what we want. And so those transformational students are the leadership training. See, when the children in schools are learning leadership skills, and we would think traditionally that's to be a boss over a company. No, that is basically a manipulator, seducer of people, know how to find out what their felt needs are, deceiver, getting them to think that you're really interested in them when in reality you're interested in using them. And then a manipulator, and that's human resource. You manipulate natural resource, now it's human resource, and so you're raw material. That's, you're materialist. Anytime you hear human resource, that's materialism.
This takes me back to my Air Force days, and I don't want to offend any Air Force people out there, but that's why the brown nosers apparently get all the promotions. And I don't know if maybe if you've ever been in the military.
Well, that's probably true everywhere.
And you always wonder about that. Well, that guy just, all he does is spend time in the boss's office. How does he get promoted? Well, yeah. Because he's a manipulator.
It's
he
relationship.
Knows how to do it.
Yeah. And it's building this. I have on my website a picture of Obama teaching a class in Chicago. And he says, he writes on the board, relationship built on self-interest. And, you know, it sounds good. Okay, well, that's, you know, you work with somebody else. Say you're out looking for gold. You know, somebody you're looking for gold with should be interested in the same subject, right? Well, that's not the case here, because if you find gold, you had better watch your back, because your friend's self-interest might cost you your life.
Yeah.
See, so if life is built, if relationship and company and country is built on self-interest, that's tyranny. And so when it comes to a crisis situation, you've got to have somebody in there to make sure that that's a facilitator of change agenda, is to make sure that that hate isn't projected, because that lies dormant, isn't projected to anybody who prevents everybody else, you know, prevents the group from getting what it wants, right there. And so Marx killed, see, but this process says we don't want the facilitator to come in and shoot people. We want the people to shoot one another.
Wow.
See, we want the crisis. And so therefore people will cry out for a solution. And of course, who are they going to have coming through the door? The facilitator of change. So it's his job to create the crisis or to stand back and allow it to be created.
Mm-hmm.
And so that then he's called in to be a mediator. He's called in to resolve the crisis. And so it's self-perpetuating profession, you know, really is. But anyway, he has to map. I was, as a teacher, trained to map the room. And the mapping is the language. Who are the traditional? Is not. See, those are the traditional students. Is, this is right and that's not. They're prejudiced. You know, 2 + 2 can only be 4 and cannot be any other number. Now, I bring that up because I actually had a math professor, head of the math department, interrupt me in a meeting and say, we're really not too sure if 2 + 2 is always 4. That was the first time I ever had an out-of-body experience. I mean, really, you just go into this, your brain's trying to wrap itself around what he just said. I think I heard him just say that, you know, and yet it's just, you lose contact. You go into the state of cognitive dissonance. Wow, these are the guys who are out there actually leading our country. These are guys setting policy. And so if you have to have, if you want the transformational world, the world of seems to be, you've got to get rid of the is and not people. You got to convert them first if you can. And if you can't, you neutralize them. And here's how I would neutralize you. If you came in as an engineer and you had the solution, and I really want to use the crisis, I don't want a solution. I want the group to solve the problem. I don't want you to come in and say this is right and that's not. So I would get everybody's input. And, of course, you're sitting there going, that is some of the stupidest stuff I ever heard in my life. Man, why do you even hire this person? Why is he part of the company? But if you say, well, that's dumb, I said, don't be negative. Let's be positive. Allow everybody to share. Mm-hmm. Now, there's deviancy, because deviancy is people who don't stay straight on the facts, on what's truth. They are off on whatever tangent they're on because they're in their aughts and they're not in what you would call reality. They're in their imagination, their illusion. Mm-hmm. And so this is key to the moral issue. If you're told to be silent, you know, don't hurt this other people. Don't say cannot, must not, thou shalt not to this other person. And he's deviant. And you don't say anything. You would say to yourself, well, I'm not like that person and we can go on. But the norm of the group is established by the deviant.
Goes to the deviant.
Deviancy becomes the norm.
Because we didn't
by your silence.
Yeah.
See, if in righteousness, that's traditional person comes in, even though he might be wrong, he still has this right-wrong structure. And if he's silent, See, you got to understand this. If we say, for instance, we have silent prayer, okay? We have different religions in the room, and for the sake of not offending anybody, and you want to say in the name of Jesus at the end of the prayer, well, let's all, for the sake of unity, for the sake of not hurting people's feelings, for the sake of freedom, let's not say anything. And so to yourself, you would pray to the Lord, but you didn't realize that anybody watching from outside, that's a godless prayer. It is godless.
Right. And how many times have we done that? I know I've done that.
And our silence condemns us. And they know that. And for the sake of the approval of the group grade, your child knows your position is right, but will be silent because they know that if they present it, they will prevent the good grade. Because the grade is based upon his compromise to work with the team. He has to get his odd out. He knows his odd is wrong, but all of a sudden he's allowed to do it. But then his conscience kicks in. Dad's voice is the conscience, or the conscience is dad's voice in him. And so he says, no, that's not right. Now all of a sudden the group can't get a group grade because the grade is on their compromise. And so if your child has a right, wrong, black, white, sheep, goats, heaven, hell paradigm, he is going to prevent the team from succeeding. Because it's not just to solve the project, it's the method that was used to solve the project, and everybody has to be willing to participate. Community, and this is key to this whole thing. You hear community all the time. By the way, Hitler was all involved in building community. Mm-hmm. You might, as a parent, give your children standards, and you hold them accountable in your home. But then you go visit the relatives. And the relatives might bend those rules, and there are sometimes you don't say anything because you want to have a relationship with your relatives.
Right.
And so community, to have common unity on diversity, because we have diversity in the community, if that is what community is, compromise, it has to be the foundation. You can't have community without compromise, but you can't have the father with compromise.
Wow.
See, and so when you come in with, as an engineer, in a sense, it'd be father that, you know, E equals MC squared or whatever formula you come in, dad said it, you know, it's a fact, and somebody says something different, and for the sake of unity, you're told not to reprove, correct, or rebuke the other person. You have now allowed deviancy, it's a moral issue, you have allowed deviancy to become the norm.
You know, I see now why, or I don't know how to phrase this, But we're in the scripture. It says, "Hold on to what you have."
Right.
I think it's in the letters to the churches in Revelation. Mm-hmm. But you can see now why that.
And words like endure, because if you hold on, you're going to have to endure what? Abuse.
Yeah. In fact, turning this ship around.
We were talking a little earlier when we were out having lunch that the evolutionists in the classroom, when they say, "Well, you have to do this," they're bullies.
Mm-hmm.
They will give you a bad grade. They will bully you. This whole issue of bullying, any facilitative change, creates a room full of bullies, because if your child refuses to compromise for the sake of the group will turn on him.
Right.
And so you've got a whole bunch of smiling kids, can't we all get along, but they're smiling, mocking, ridiculing, making fun of this one student who comes in and says, "This is right and that's not," because it's his paradigm. It's not the issue. It's not the content. Bloom actually says, we're not looking at the content. We're looking at the procedure. And so how did these children come to the decision of what's right and wrong? Like Adam and Eve, how they felt and what they thought in the moment, rather than what dad said. And so the classrooms today are being used to liberate the children from parental authority. And that's what Bloom said. Mm-hmm. There are many stories of the conflict and tensions that these practices are producing in between the parents and the children. He puts it right there in the teacher's training manual. This process is causing division in the home.
Wow.
It's right, and that's its intent.
And somehow they got it through. They got it through.
Because we trusted education, and I'm not against education, but mm-hmm. we didn't know that there's good methods and there were wicked methods. And, of course, all they did was simply, can't we get the kids to work together, democracy in the classroom. We're a constitutional republic. We're not a democracy.
Right.
Democracy is tyranny.
Right.
And ends up, because what it is everybody does what they feel like doing eventually, and then we have just a complete breakdown, because mm-hmm. it's not principle. They call it principle, but the principle is not absolutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in fact, I sometimes listen to the testimonies of liberals, and they you know, they were very thankful they had strict authoritarian parents. And I go, this person is so confused. You know, I wouldn't be the person I was today if it wasn't for my parents forcing me to read and study and do all these things. And I'm going, well, you know, you're like Abraham Maslow. He said, here he destroyed his own family. And he writes in his journal, my children got me in a conflict with my theory. I've been in continuous conflict ever since. Who should teach whom? In other words, eventually, when you have your own children, you begin to realize that all these wonderful ideas you had before you had children really are bogus. They don't work because you love your family, you love your children, and you know you're chasing them. You tell them that's wrong. If you truly love somebody and what they're doing is going to hurt them or hurt others, you're going to tell them that's wrong. Because sometimes you don't have time to explain it to them. And if you have to remove that is and not, right, wrong, black, white, sheep, goats, heaven, hell, above, below language in communication, you not only lose your own family, you lose your the civility of society, of the nation. And you end up with a society of deviancy, perversity, abomination. Because God says that which is highly esteemed among men. And this is all about self-esteem comes, if you esteem self, it can't come from you, it has to come from the group, approval of others.
That kind of takes us back to covert and overt authority. Do you fear what the group thinks about you, or do you fear what the Lord's going to do?
Approval of God or approval from the group? See, and so the shift is because, you know, we all want approval. It is such a big part of our life. We want, it is hard to stand alone. A friend of mine, Steve Goss, he has this PowerPoint picture of this guy standing against a wall, and there are 100, if not more, people with stakes pointing at him with sharp points. And he's all alone, you know. It's the pressure of the group. You know, are you going to give in to the group, or are you going to be shish kebabbed? You know, and then this is the trauma. This is terrorism. This is micro. I call it micro terrorism. But these children are going through trauma in the classroom because they have to choose between what their parents said, what they know is right, and literally searing their conscience, because conscience can only come from one. The superego is two or more. Superego is feelings. Notice, and you know, they just conveniently said, well, we don't want to call what we're doing a seared conscience.
Come up with another word.
Yeah, we'll come up with superego. And so therefore, you end up with a culture that can kill the unborn, kill the elderly, kill anybody who resists change, you know, neutralize them, get everybody's input, marginalize them. Because once you get everybody's input in a group, and then you keep insisting on your positions being right, now even your friends won't associate with you. And then remove you. Either you'll leave or you'll be removed. Well, that's brutal. I mean, you literally are going through a trauma. You're enduring. Enduring is not a pleasure. Suffering is not a pleasurable thing. You're going through those things. Jesus despised the shame of the cross, which was rejection. It wasn't just a physical rejection. It was a social rejection. It was people he loved were not hearing the message, and they were out to kill him. And Jesus said, they don't hate you, they hate me. You understand? He is presenting a father's authority. He says, you know, deny yourself as you would as a child under a father. Pick up your cross. In other words, when you're out with your friends, you tell your friends that's wrong. Well, why? Because dad said so. It is written, it is written, it is written. So Jesus was telling, you know, Satan, who comes along and says, you know, like somebody, you're one of your children's neighborhood kids, you know, you're wrong. Dad says, dad says, dad says. And then all of a sudden, you know, of course, in that case, Satan left because he confronted him with lust of flesh, lust of the eyes, prior lies. The same three things that Satan presented with Eve. She went to dialogue, got cooked. Jesus went back to dad. Dad said, dad said, dad said, and he left. So the real agenda, see, is how can we restore this father's language in a culture when there's no support for the father?
Yeah, there's...
And so how do you recover a nation? Because my concern, like I said earlier, with conservatives, they want to restore America. And I said, you have missed it, because it's not focused on the family. It's focused on the father. They focused on the father. And they knew that if we get rid of the father, we have the family. We can buy and sell the souls of those children. See, we will buy them with their feelings. And then we can do portfolios, because this is all, they do psychological portfolios on everybody. Everybody's being, you know, where are you along that spectrum? Traditional, transitional, transformational. And that spectrum is based upon love of the world and hate of the Father. You're going to love God or mammon. But there's a spectrum. How far are you along in that spectrum? To them, it's gray. Everything's gray. There's no black and white. There's no right or wrong. It's gray. It could be right. It could be wrong. Who knows? And so it's all about grading. You don't want somebody in high society, or, you know, as far as setting policy, who has a strong conscience. Because if government is doing this process, then that conscience is going to interfere with whatever government wants to do. There's a quote, and I tell you, I refer to this quite often in my articles. This is Carl Rogers in People Shapers. He writes, not Rogerian psychology, big to education, open-ended, we can talk about anything. Non-directive, I'm not going to tell you what's right and wrong. That's what Satan said, we can talk about anything. What do you think about the tree? I'm not going to tell you what's right and wrong. See, you won't die. We can talk about, you know. But anyway, Rogers writes, we can choose to use our growing knowledge to enslave people in ways never dreamed of before, depersonalizing them, controlling them by means so carefully selected that they will perhaps never be aware of their loss of personhood. That's the power of this process. Then he says, we know how to change the opinions of an individual in a selected direction without his ever becoming aware of the stimuli which changed his opinion. If you have the power or the authority to establish the necessary conditions, and that's what teachers are trained in. See, Marx said the educator himself must be educated. If you give them this tool, this facilitating of process, then it's necessary that they produce a condition. The predictive behavior will follow. Bloom's objective was, how can we change the classroom environment? If we get rid of the teacher up front, giving commands, facts, rules, and truth, facts and truth, and then chastening those, or blessing those children who, you know, did get it right, give them a good grade, chastening those children who don't get it right, who do what's wrong, and then casting out those who disrespect the teacher's authority. The same place in the workplace, same paradigm. If we can get rid of that condition and we bring in a facilitator who allows the children to share their resentment towards authority, it directly changes the way the children think. So the leadership in the room directly affects how that next generation thinks. The predicted behavior will follow. We can achieve a sort of control which, under the controlled, though they are following it, we can achieve a sort of control under which the controlled, though they are following a code much more scrupulously than ever was the case under the old system. You ever gone fishing? Yeah, how many rules there are in fishing? Which stream? You go to Colorado, man, you better pay attention to whether you're using a lure or a fly or live bait, or whether you're going to bring one fish in or two or four. There are so many rules, or whether you should even be there. So we have all these rules. Of course, we say, well, it's good for the fish or whatever. But anyway, it's following a code much more scrupulous than ever was the case under the old system. Nevertheless, they feel free. They're doing what they want to do. See, that's the odd. Not what they're forced to do. That's the parent. By careful design, we control not the final behavior. See, we're not telling the children how to behave, but the inclination behavior. We create an environment which affects their motives, see, their desires, their wishes. The curious thing in that case, the question of freedom never arises. We have lost our sovereignty because we allowed a facilitator of change to walk into the church building, practice the same procedure that Satan produced or practiced on the woman in the garden, and facilitator of change, produce change. And so, therefore, the church doesn't turn to the Word of God to make decision, but to the opinions of men.
To the opinion.
That's to make decisions.
That's
why we
started the interview with
our opinion stinks before God. It does on the day of judgment. Your opinion and my opinion doesn't count. Jump out of a plane 20,000 feet. You can have your opinion of gravity all you want. Eventually hit an object.
You can think about Superman all you want.
Yeah.
It isn't going to make one.
And so we are accountable to God. And this is, if we don't bring our thought structure back to eternity, this isn't just for the moment. Everybody's hooked up on the moment. You know, what team's winning? What, you know, all the stuff that's going on, the crisis around the world, everything's bringing us into the moment. We're not considering the eternal consequence of what your neighbors are saying, or what your children are saying, or how they're thinking. And until we come back to that, restoring America, early America was about the soul. It was about where you're going to spend eternity. It wasn't just about the pleasure, because back then it was tough living. The average age was 40. See, that's how old you would live. Now we live a lot longer. Now we're looking at, you know, we have what, adults, you know, children's brains, and you know, adults playing with children's toys. They haven't grown up. 40-year-olds playing with toys. You know, I just say the difference between a child and an adult is a child uses money to buy toys with, to play with. An adult uses money to buy land to work. We have become a consumer-driven society. We've become a society of entertainment, and we're not a producer society. And what they did was the Frankfurt School, especially Adorno and Herbert Marcuse, looked at this. You've got to bring eros. You've got to bring feelings into the workplace. Because it used to be a child would do what the parents said. Take the garbage out. He didn't feel like doing it. He put his feelings to the side. He suspended his feelings to do the father's commands. That's faith. But they said, let's make sure that no worker works without feeling good about it. Mm-hmm. See, and so therefore, feelings become the driving force of whether the work is worth doing or not. And that became work salvation. So even in a church, you do things in the church because of the feelings you can get out of it, rather than doing what the Lord directs you to do, whether you get positive feedback or not.
We are hip deep in this stuff. Oh. I mean, just we're up to our eyeballs in it.
Yeah.
It's truly, and ever since, it's the flood coming out of the mouth of the dragon.
Yeah.
And James talks about this a lot on his shows. The flood, this is all spiritual. The flood is coming out of the mouth because it's words. It's communication. Yeah. And it's a flood. And we're literally up to our eyeballs in it.
We've lost the language of godly authority. Now, when man has authority, he can be a tyrant. But it's godly authority, which brings us to repentance, which brings us to a broken heart, a humble heart before the Lord. And then we can truly communicate His love into this world. But today we have a love that's it's a temporary love. It's a false love. It's, I'll love you as long as I get something out of this for me. So, you know, that's where, again, you go back to what Obama wrote, building relationship on self-interest. Wow, that's a wicked, 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 wicked process.
And there he is, president. And it sounds good.
And it sounds good up front. Yeah, you and I go into business because we're all both interested in this. But the real issue is self is not a good foundation to build on, because self is vain, it's envious, and it will destroy whatever gets in its way if it can.
Wow, the heart is desperately wicked, yeah. For sure.